We're about to hear the word Kameshwari, which is one of the names of the goddess we're going to be meditating on and talking about today. So I would like to welcome you to our sixth and, for now, final class in this series on the Wisdom Goddess Empowerment. I'm, as always, really ecstatic to be here. I don't know if this happens for you guys, but for you divine beings, and I use the phrase you guys because it's what I've been saying since I was in the second grade to indicate humans, and I realize that it's a word that has a lot of coded meanings. So I'm going to try to substitute you divine beings for that in our ongoing conversations. But when I conceived this class, one of my goals was for all of us to deepen our recognition and our ability to recognize what it means to connect to the divine feminine and what it feels like for us personally to connect to the divine feminine, and meaning to connect to goddess physically through the body, to connect to goddess emotionally through our feelings, and also to connect to goddess through our visual cortex, you know, through our capacity for imagination and our capacity for understanding. Because all these parts of us are expressions of goddess. They are also doorways or vehicles through which we tune into the goddess. So in order for all of us to kind of get a sense of what goddess feels like, I wanted to offer a kind of survey, so to speak. It's like in college they have survey courses. This is a little bit of a survey course of the different goddesses in the Hindu pantheon. Of course, we were not able to practice with all the goddesses, but what we did do, the way we did kind of get to understand some of the variety in the Hindu goddess pantheon, is that we practiced with goddesses of different types. So some of the strong goddesses like Durga and Kali, with the motherly goddess Bhuvaneshwari, and with Lakshmi, who is not only a goddess of beauty, but she's also one of the motherly goddesses, with Saraswati, who is one of a group of goddesses that appear in different traditions, the goddesses of language and wisdom. For instance, in the Western tradition, the goddess Sophia is a form of Saraswati. In Buddhism, the goddess Tara, there are several goddess Taras, but white Tara corresponds to Saraswati, is a goddess of wisdom. And generally speaking, goddesses fall into these three general, let's call them categories, the fierce wild ones, whom we call on for deep transformation, for evolutionary or revolutionary activity, and for protection. You know, Durga and Kali and Chinamasta and Bhairavi and the other strong goddesses, Sekhmet in the Egyptian tradition, they're goddesses of protection as well as goddesses of revolutionary force. They're goddesses who can just change your reality in a moment. So the motherly goddesses, Bhuvaneshwari, who is quite a lot like Kuan Yin in the Chinese and Tibetan traditions, in that she spreads this cloud of beauty and protectiveness and sort of embracing spaciousness around all of us. I think for many of us, the discovery of the goddess Bhuvaneshwari, the lady of space, has been an important part of this practice. And the beautiful goddesses like Lakshmi, who is a mother goddess, not in quite the same way as Bhuvaneshwari, but she is loved as sort of an example of the beautiful mother, as well as for abundance and beauty. So both of these goddesses, Bhuvaneshwari and and Lakshmi, and also the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari, whom we're going to enter into a relationship with this week. These are all devis who are traditionally called on for abundance boons, for whatever it is that we need more of in our life, which, and one secret that I want to offer you from my own experience is that Lakshmi, Bhuvaneshwari, and Lalita are the goddesses that you go to for health. They're both, all three of them, really carry within them the power of well-being, the power of health itself. So when you think about, you know, actually asking for the grace of a particular goddess, and when I say that, I want to say that all the goddesses essentially give you the boons of abundance sooner or later. But when you're looking for help in one of the areas regarding success or finances, or leadership, other sort of allied qualities, Lakshmi or Bhuvaneshwari, or even more powerfully, Lalita, would be the goddesses that you would relate to. Now, one of the reasons why we're practicing with different goddesses, and some of you have mentioned that you would like more time with each of them, and I agree with you. In fact, I would go so far as to say that a very skillful way to come out of this class, to come out of this course, would be to make a decision that you're going to practice with one of the goddesses, the one that you felt most strongly drawn to, that you're actually going to do a 3-week practice with that goddess and really let yourself get to know her, to become intimate with her. This is, as again, many of you know from experience and many of you intuit, this is how we become really intimate with a goddess, just as with a person. You know, we spend time with them, we hang out with them. However, the reason that I chose in this class to practice with a group of different goddesses is because I do feel that in order to make what I would call an informed connection with a particular form of the sacred feminine, it's really good to explore several of them, because so often, you know, we have an idea about a certain goddess or an idea that we could never have anything to do with that goddess. And by learning about her and practicing with her mantra and bringing her into our bodies in a visualization, we start to recognize that we may have kinship with certain energies that we didn't even know were part of our field. And this is important for several reasons. One, of course, being that goddess presence is intrinsically delightful and sacred and in every way helpful, but also because the goddesses do hold qualities of personality that are very often unexplored, unexamined parts of ourselves. So even when a goddess form feels very familiar and pleasing or very strange and hard to relate to or too intense, what we do start to discover is that there are certain unique qualities that we can find through our goddess relationships that are in us. And that there are also qualities that all the goddesses share. They're core qualities that can be discovered behind the face of Kali, behind the face of Bhuvaneshwari, behind the face of Lakshmi. There's behind all the faces of the individual goddesses is a felt experience of what these days we often call the presence. But I call that quality that gets sort of detonated in us when we tune into goddess, I call it subtle eros, the quality of juiciness and aliveness that many of us grow out of as we grow out of childhood. You know, I spent last weekend with a 7-year-old, and he plays hard. So I got to play hard all weekend. But one of the things that I saw in hanging out with him is how much aliveness a child has, a happy, healthy child, and how being around such a child can just fill us with his or her qualities of aliveness. So in a certain sense, the goddesses are holding that essential eros, that essential aliveness that is at the heart of, that is the life force. And once we start to recognize it and to tune into where we feel alive, we start to find her in circumstances that feel uncomfortable or sometimes even, painful or tedious. So the word eros, and we'll say more about it, the word eros has been relegated to the sexual. But actually eros is the inner taste of reality itself. It's the ecstatic urgency of total aliveness. Its nature is a kind of holy pleasure, and H-O-L-Y, sacred pleasure, that is the truth about eros, is that it is the sacredness of pleasure. This pleasure that when we are healthy, when we're open, when we're feeling into our own life energy, we can feel it literally bursting through ourselves. And once we've tuned into this core erotic presence, which another name for it, of course, is blissfulness or eros. But I'm using the word, blissfulness or ananda is the Sanskrit word. I'm using the Greek word eros because it carries this, it carries a somewhat more gritty feeling, so to speak. It's got a more down to earth feeling than the word bliss or ananda, which tends to, feel only transcendent, only upper chakras, whereas eros can be experienced through the entire body, through the entire field of your life. So our main focus this week will be on the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari, who is, as far as I've been able to determine, the sort of ultimate goddess of divine eros. So let's begin by invoking her through the breath. I have found that there are three really powerful ways to invoke goddess presence in any given moment. One of them is through the form, through imagining the form, which we'll do later. Another is by allowing ourselves to become present to the energy that's breathing us, that's moving through the breath. And a third, and those of you who studied with me know that this is one of my favorite practices, the third is to imagine that there is an invisible, loving, feminine presence who is seeing you and feeling you through every particle of the air, of the atmosphere. So you allow yourself to become, as it were, passive, to become receptive to the loving gaze of this invisible being who is the form of goddess. So we're going to practice, we'll be practicing in all these three ways during the class, but right now we're going to practice with the breath. So find your posture, find a comfortable upright posture. I really love connecting the lower body by feeling into the triangle that's formed by the top of the pubic bone and the two sits bones. So there is literally a natural triangle, and as we know, the triangle is one of the geometric forms that appears in all the mandalas of the goddess. So this triangle is in our body at the sacrum, at the sacred place, at the root of the torso. So see if you can find the sits bones, the top of the pubic bone, and feel the triangle there. Your genital organs are in the middle of the triangle. But in this practice, you're just going to see if you can feel how that triangle supports your body. And let the inhalation, as we're setting the posture, flow down as though it were flowing through the center of the triangle and into the earth. And then with the exhalation, see if you can feel earth energy. If you like to meditate with colors, you can imagine it as a deep reddish brown energy that flows up with the exhalation from that place in the center of the earth, in through the core of the pelvis, and up through the center of the body, out the crown. So just take a moment or two to ground our posture with the feeling that the inhalation makes the base of the posture heavy. The exhalation gently lifts the torso up through the vertebrae of the spinal column. Now, I'd like to ask you to open yourself to the recognition that the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari, the beautiful one of the three worlds, the playful, infinitely lovely incarnation of divine beauty, love, and fierceness, because this goddess has the qualities of both Lakshmi and Kali. She's ultimate beauty, and she's ultimate power. She's making love to you through the air. She is literally pouring herself into you through the air around you, through your pores, and whatever your mood or whatever you're feeling or wherever you are at this moment, see if you can imagine or if you can feel or if you can just have the intention that every pore of your body opens to receive her through the breath. The breath is flowing through the front of the body, through the back, through the sides, as though the pores of the body open to receive the love and the life force of Goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari. She's making love to you through the air. She's making love to you from the earth through the seat you're sitting on. Her erotic life force has become the threads of your clothing. So you're held and embraced by the clothing on your body as the form of the goddess Lalita. And just let yourself receive the lovemaking of the universe, Lalita's adoring, reverential recognition of you, as you allow the breath to flow with the feeling that she, the goddess of ultimate allurement, is drawing you towards herself and towards the love that connects everything in this universe through the breath. So when we tune into Lalita, and when we meditate on Lalita, and I can tell you this from my own experience because I have been doing a practice with this goddess for several years now, and what occurs when we practice with her is that a deep current of natural eros starts to flow through us, this kind of ecstatic urgency that, as I said earlier, has sometimes been buried just through the the way in which life unfolds, but which is at the heart of all becoming. And as you tune into her, she can awaken your capacity for experiencing the natural world as a kind of dance partner, as a kind of love affair partner, the love affair being the love affair with consciousness as it appears in the physical universe. So Lalita's expression is felt in the contact of our senses with whatever we see, taste, hear, and smell. She's the goddess of desire. She's the goddess of enlightened sensuality. She's the ultimate goddess of love. And her name, which means the lovely, playful one, represents allurement itself. The allurement, this is Brian Swim's very beautiful phrase, the allurement that draws atoms and molecules together to form complex organisms, that draws us towards those individuals with whom we have a karmic destiny or who represent the next phase in our life journey. She's the energy also that unfolds in those moments when your heart opens for no reason, when you shout for joy. And she's also the power that draws the child into the womb. She is literally the goddess of Lila, of the enlightened playfulness that manifests as all this. So as we tune into the goddess Lalita, or Sundari, as many people call her, Sundari means beautiful, beauty, I want to proceed, I want to begin by paying homage to one of her sisters, the goddess Dumhavati, the crone goddess who stands for stasis and disappointment and frustration. Now, why do we want to do that? One reason is because without really getting to know Dumhavati, we can't really know what it is to walk this path. You know, in fact, without getting to know Dumhavati, our spirituality is kind of fake, because what we come to understand when we recognize her is that Tantra celebrates every moment in life and every moment in the unfolding of our experience, and that includes the moments when we don't feel alive, when we don't feel joy. So in a certain sense, Lalita and Dumhavati are the two sides of the experience of moving through the spiritual world. Because when we really want to break through in our journey to the depths of ourselves, you know, if we're serious about it, and, you know, admittedly we're not always serious about it, sometimes we'd rather just relax, but in those moments when we recognize that the purpose of our life is this journey into the depths of ourselves, it becomes vitally important that we learn how to see the sacred nature of every current of energy in life. And that includes the times when we seem to be making no progress. So whereas Kali is the goddess of intensity, of endings, of dramatic revolutionary moments in our sadhana, and Kali's shadow is the shadow of war and disruption, Dumhavati is the personification of how it feels to feel oppressed, depressed, downtrodden, veiled, when we don't know what we're really supposed to do. Cosmically, she represents the sleep state and the experience of consciousness embedded in matter. You know, in other words, Dumhavati is present in the earth itself, you know, which is obviously much less conscious than you are, much less conscious than a rabbit, but is still in a non-dual world when we understand that this is a non-dual world. we understand that even in what appears to be dense matter, consciousness also lives. And that experience is an experience of Dumavati. Her name means smoky one. Everything about her is she's kind of grayed out, you know, kind of smoky gray, evanescent in the way that smoke is. And since every one of us goes through times when we feel deeply stuck, either in our practice, in our work, in our relationships, and almost invariably when we find ourselves in one of those stuck times, we feel that something's wrong, we resist it, and we do everything we can to get out of it. But the secret, really the secret of Dumavati, is to recognize that periods when we feel stuck, when we can't move forward, when our health is challenged and we have to rest, these are also periods when we get to assimilate the experience. And now, what I mean is when we get to assimilate our own experience. And this is especially true in sadhana. You know, because when we have a breakthrough or when we have a when we move to a new plateau of practice, it's almost always followed by a feeling of, okay, now what? And very often with a feeling that we've actually stopped making progress. You know, there'll be a big moment of release or opening, and then a sense of nothing, of emptiness. So the necessity of stasis, you know, whether it's the stasis of deep sleep or the stasis of dry periods in our life or in our practice, we would never rest, obviously. We would just keep on desiring and doing, making, knowing. And we'd never really gain the wisdom that comes from contemplating our experience. So she really forces us to contemplate our own path. Ramana Maharshi and Shankaracharya, who are two of the sages of the non-dual direct path teachings, they were both Vedanta teachers, but say that what is ultimately real is that which remains in deep sleep. So, in other words, if you can tune in to the presence that is there even when you're unconscious, when you're deeply asleep, then you have tuned into that which remains no matter what occurs in life. Dumavati is the goddess who shows you what remains when everything falls away. So she's a goddess of void, and she is paradoxically one of the doorways, one of the gateways into our opening to Lalita. So Dumavati is often depicted as skinny, wizened. She carries a winnowing basket in her hand, and the winnowing basket is a tool that farmers in pre-industrial times used to separate grain from chaff, you know, when you're harvesting, when you're milling wheat. And Dumavati's basket represents her power to winnow the real from the unreal, the truth about existence from our false expectations. She carries a banner with a crow on it, and the crow in India represents is considered the symbol of inauspiciousness, and at the same time the crow is a symbol of magic. So in a certain sense, the crow banner that Dumavati carries shows us that even in what appears to be inauspicious, there is a transformative magic that we can harness. So she rides. Dumavati is in a chariot that has no horses. So from a worldly point of view, the chariot is a conveyance of somebody who's stuck, who's stalled. But from an esoteric point of view, and I really, really love this, I think it's incredibly important, the stalled chariot, the stuck chariot, represents the present moment, the space between one breath and another, which is actually the doorway into eternity. She's called the widow. She's the only one of the goddesses without a consort. And she's present in all forms of disappointment, when your luck is bad. Therefore, she's not a goddess that you want to court. We're not going to invoke Dumavati. I'm really bringing her up more so that you can understand what it is that's happening in our lives when we have those moments of dryness and disappointment. Because when we honor Dumavati during the dry seasons, she ensures, and again, I can tell you this from my own experience, and I think many of you can also, she ensures that we learn the deep lessons that can only be learned in disappointment. You know, in the Hindu and Buddhist teachings on karma, there's the understanding that all of us, without exception, have to experience the results of all our past actions, whether they were negative or positive. So when our difficult karmic lessons are up for us, she is the one who reveals the wisdom in all of them. And I have found that one of the great lessons of Dumavati is that she shows us how to persevere, even when things feel really, really, really terrible. So what are the gifts of disappointment? One of the greatest is humility. And I don't really know how we learn humility except by being frustrated, stuck, and disappointed. You know, it's because when things fall apart, when our lives feel broken, when we've made an effort and nothing has come of it, if we're able to sit in that and hold it, and with the goddess's grace we can, then we recognize what humility really feels like. Because even though we say that humility isn't the same as humiliation, the truth is that what we experience as the ego's humiliation is actually one of the main ways in which we become aware of the extraordinary sweetness that comes to us when we have been thoroughly humbled, when there's nothing left to lose. You know, when the arrogance that goes along with success and often with youthfulness, and that starts to get worn down as our bodies get worn down, when you can imbibe her lessons about humility during the winnowing time, then when the good times come again, which they do, they always do, because that's how life is, then the good times don't make you arrogant. And I do believe it's why it's so important in life to get knocked down a few times. You know, it's so much harder to learn those lessons, for instance, if you've had early success. It's much easier in a certain way if you struggle at the beginning and get rewarded later. But there's always going to be struggle. There's always going to be the necessity to surrender to circumstances, which, again, is one of Dumavati's lessons, surrender, which very often begins when outside circumstances force us to give up control. So, in surrender, in Dumavati's teaching on surrender, there is also the teaching of renunciation, and literally the renunciation of the ideas of who you're supposed to be in order to feel okay about yourself. You know, and every one of us has them. If I don't live up to this expectation, I'm a failure. I don't deserve to be called a human being. But Dumavati's lesson is that when you renounce your ideas, you renounce your idea that, you know, your feeling of having to be like this or like that, that's when you actually receive the truth of the lesson that Krishna gives Arjuna, his disciple, very famously in the Bhagavad Gita, which is that peace, genuine peace, follows genuine renunciation. And all of that, you know, the humility, surrender, renunciation, will culminate in a feeling of profound freedom, the recognition that whatever happens, at the core, your unbreakable. You are the unbreakable self. And this is one of the most beautiful gifts of Tumavati. Her fifth gift, which I think we all really need to imbibe right now, is compassion for the powerless. Because, you know, when we have the experience of our own powerlessness, then we're able to look at the people that we see around us. I think for many of us, just the situation of the refugees pouring into Europe and now into the southwestern United States, we see the grief, the pain, the sorrow of being marginalized and displaced and unsupported. And even though we would rather forget our own moments of feeling like that, the truth is that these moments are inundated with divine force and are part of the great gift of Tumavati. So many of you are familiar, of course, with Eckhart Tolle's work, and I think I've mentioned this in other classes here. But if you remember his story, his waking up from the dream story, Eckhart Tolle was in a major depression. He was sitting on a park bench in London, and everything in his life had kind of come to nothing. So he had this feeling of having no future, no connections in the world. He was, I think as he describes it, he was so depressed that he literally could not get up from the bench. And at that moment, he did a little moment of self-inquiry and then was catapulted into what he later called the power of now. He rode his depression into the experience of past and future dissolving into the present, and saw that in the present moment, everything is okay. In the present moment, everything is delicious, even when from a sensory point of view it may not feel delicious. So in other words, he saw into, and I would say is one of the best, you know, teachers of what happens when you give in to Tumavati. So Tumavati, when we say that she's the gateway into Lalita Tripura Sundari, what we mean is that when we let ourselves be stripped of everything in us that is not authentically ourself, it's at that moment that the full abundance and beauty and power and sacred eros that's inherent in our bodies and in the world begins to reveal itself. So we're going to segue out of the emptiness of Tumavati and into the fullness of Lalita. And we'll begin by chanting her name, Lalita Tripura Sundari, the playful beauty. That Tripura literally means three cities, and we'll talk in a minute about what that means. Lalita is the playful one. Sundari means beautiful. So we'll, and the mantras that we're going to chant, which are in a slightly different order than the Lakshmi mantras, and have Lalita's name attached to them. So I will chant them a couple of times. They are on the website, and I'm pretty sure that Deb sent you a copy of them. If not, you can just follow me, and you can find it on the course page of the website later on this week. So the Mula Mantra of Lalita Tripura Sundari is Aum Aim Hrim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha. Aum Aim Hrim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha. Ambika means lotus-eyed one, or the lady who sits on a lotus. So it's one of the honorifics that's applied to the very pure experience of of deities who are often said to have, as Buddha was said to have, a seat in the shape of a lotus, which, as you know, the lotus is an exquisite waxy flower which comes in several different shades, which grows from the mud at the bottom of a lake or a river. Probably not a river, because a lotus is seen to grow in still water. So the pure flower is connected to the mud, and this is part of the reason why the lotus is such a powerful sacred symbol. So I'm going to say it a couple of times, and then once you kind of have the hang of it, you can chant along with me, and we'll chant 5 times. Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha. Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha. Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha. Aum Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha. And we'll do it one more time. Aum Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikayai Namaha. Your eyes are closed. Make sure your posture is steady and comfortable. Feel now that you're seated on a cloud. And you know how when you look out the window of a plane, the clouds look so puffy and comfortable. Well, these are the clouds that really are puffy and comfortable. You're in a very subtle universe. In fact, your own body has become a body of light. And you see in front of you, literally rising from the sky, Lalita's abode, which is called the Island of Jewels. And as your cloud sails closer to the island, you see that though it looks like jewels, it's actually made of light. It's made of jeweled light. Ruby red and emerald green, sapphire blue, pearly white, bright diamond radiance. So this jeweled light in the shape of a vast lotus whose petals undulate in different shimmering colors, the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari is seated. Her body is made of ruby, rosy red light, which glows like the inside of a ruby. She is the essence of beauty. She's, if you can imagine, the most alive, the most charged, the most ecstatic you've ever felt. And multiply that by 10,000, you begin to experience the shimmering aliveness, the joy of Lalita. She has large lotus-like eyes and long trailing dark blue hair. She wears a tiara. And caught on one of the points of the tiara is a crescent moon. The moon represents the feminine energy and also the mind under the control of the goddess. One of Lalita's names is Shodashi, which means the 16th, and it refers to her quality of being a full-blown moon, the moon in its perfection. Around her neck is a necklace of skulls, just like Kali, and you can see why she's, I said earlier that she's kind of a combination of Lakshmi and Kali. The skulls of, tell us that she has the ego under control. In fact, she's the controller of all egos. The skulls also represent the sounds, the sound syllables of the Sanskrit alphabet, which, as you remember from one of our other classes, are the vibrations that create the physical universe. So Lalita's skull necklace actually demonstrates her power of creativity as well as her power to remove the false ego. She's naked above the waist. She has beautiful breasts, which poets love to praise. She's wearing adornments. She has necklaces of gold with jewels. She has four arms. In one of her hands, she holds a bow which represents desire. And I will say a little bit more about that later. It's the desire, the creative desire that sets worlds in motion. You know, desire is the source of all creativity. It's really the source of all manifestation. Desire is the first stir in the vastness of the transcendent absolute, which sets in motion the whole play of this world. So, and you know, and that desire, that quality of desire of erotic allurement, is encoded into every particle of the universe. So the fact that Lalita is fundamentally, profoundly a goddess of desire, one of her names is Kameshwari, is profoundly important to her and to our understanding of desire itself. So in her hands, she holds five arrows made of flowers, and these arrows represent the five, they actually represent what desire does to you. They're called longing. One of the arrows is called longing. Another is called maddening. Another is called kindling. The fourth is called enchanting. And the fifth is called wasting, because desire creates longing. It creates a kind of obsessive madness when it's strong. It kindles everything. So our desire is what kindles action. It's enchanting. That is enchanting both in the sense of being attractive, but also enchanting in the sense of deluding us into thinking that certain objects of desire are going to make us happy when actually they won't. And wasting, because when we follow certain desires, especially our addictive desires, they waste us. They literally make our bodies waste away. So the flower arrows, you know, as all the symbology is kind of complex. The fire arrows, flower arrows also represent the senses. And because, of course, it's through the senses, through our capacity to see, hear, touch, smell, and taste, that that our desire moves into physical reality. So in another hand, she holds an elephant goad. And the elephant goad, which is we also Bhuvaneshwari also holds the goad. Remember that the goad represents the power of attachment, which attachment being the primary cause of suffering, craving, which is, you know, one of the shadow sides of desire. The goad represents the suffering caused by attachment, but it also represents, because remember, all the goddesses are, they're double-sided, you know, so the goad creates our suffering. The goad also is the impulse that keeps us on the spiritual path. It's like the goddess is constantly sticking us with her goad to keep us moving forward. And her other hand holds a lasso, which also is both the lasso of divine attraction that keeps us moving on the path. It's also the lasso that holds us to Dharma, that keeps us actually steady on the path. So you're sitting on the cloud. The Island of Jewels is right in front of you, and in the center of it is the goddess. And we're going to take her in. So imagine her body shimmering with the translucent radiance of a ruby, and feel that this ruby red light flows from her heart into your heart. So as you inhale this ruby-colored radiance from the heart of the goddess into your heart, and you feel it filling your heart, your lungs, your whole chest area. And as you inhale, you draw in her light, and you feel it filling you with this radiance, this exquisite, loving, creative passion for life. Because this is who Lalita is. She is the radiance of passion, the passion that throws itself into this creation, the passion that's willing to suffer for the sake of manifesting all this, the passion that ultimately carries us to the enlightened state. So Lalita represents the Shakti of utter fulfillment. She is what we really want by getting what we want. When you desire something, what you're really desiring is the bliss of Lalita. So just sit and breathe in her ruby red radiance and feel that your inhalation draws in this exquisite red light. And feel it flowing in from her heart into your heart, and then beginning to flow through your body, to flow through your stomach and your hips and your legs and your down to your feet. Feel it flowing up from the heart, through the shoulders and the head and the arms and the hands. And as you allow yourself to breathe in Lalita's exquisite radiance, her ruby-like radiance, you may notice that your body wants to move. Lalita is a dancer. She undulates constantly. Her nature is vibration. So as her light comes into your body, you feel her aware, spiritually alive, erotically fulfilled, utterly capable of performing any action that you desire to perform. She is power itself. So as you draw in the red light of the goddess Lalita, you are drawing in the full power of goddess. And because her mantra, which is her sound form, really completes the process of finding her within yourself, we're going to add the seed syllables of the Lalita Mula Mantra. Aum Aim Hrim Shrim. And my suggestion is that you inhale with the red light. Aum Aim Hrim Shrim. And then exhale, feeling the light flowing through the body and allowing the syllables of the beach mantras Aum Aim Hrim Shrim to flow with and guide the light as it flows through your body. One of Lalita's names is Raja Rajeshwari, which means queen of kings. So she's like, she's the goddess of rulers, and she's the ruler of the universe. She's a love goddess. She's a demon slayer. We'll tell that story in a minute. She's fierce. She's respectable. That is to say, she's married. She's, you know, in India, that's very important. She's a married woman. She's married to Shiva. She's also utterly beyond the conventional world. I've said this before, and I want to say it again, that I really see Beyoncé as a modern version of Lalita, almost as though she set out to incarnate this particular revelation of the divine feminine. If you saw her performance in the Grammys, I think in 2016 or 2017, you saw her come out in a golden goddess costume, and she, you know, of course, all of her work is filled with drama. And I, you know, I have no idea what her personal life is like, but she seems to have kind of married audacity, sexuality, power, you know, the warrior quality, the sort of domestic goddess quality. So she has the audacity of the wild feminine and the softness of the consort goddess. I feel often that, you know, one of the reasons that people love Beyoncé is because she has this quality of the emergent feminine. And obviously, Beyoncé as a performer, she's not, let's say, she's not a normal person. But, you know, just as big archetypes help us to see our own version of it, I would say that Lalita and those people, those women who managed to incarnate this, is very much the enlightened feminine of the future. So she's the goddess of, she's the evolutionary goddess. She's in a certain sense, she represents the evolution of the archetypes of the feminine, such that the feminine feels empowered to be both loving and wild, to be both gentle and fierce, to slay demons and to make love, to fully emerge as herself, and to go along with that, the masculine has to have the stability, the steadiness, and the confidence to stand beside such an archetype of the feminine. And I do believe that through our willingness to invoke Lalita and to, you know, to be willing to bring forth this aspect of the goddess in ourselves, to recognize our own potential for being fully self-possessed, fully erotic, fully powerful, fully loving aspect of the divine feminine, and as a man, as a man, to hold the masculine equivalent of that, which is strong and sinuous, able to provide a container for the great dancer who is the goddess, but also fully having mastered his own wildness. And I would also say that in my experience of meditating with Lalita, I have had the deepest experiences of inner fulfillment and self-contentment that I have ever had with a goddess practice, with a deity practice. And the other thing that's interesting, I know, is that the more I internalize her, the more my external life begins to take on her qualities. So this is a kind of a drum roll. Hopefully you can take this as a good reason to, you know, kind of get close to her, get intimate with her, bring her in. So, again, you're on your cloud. The goddess is seated in front of you. And as her body sways and moves in her sitting posture, and as the radiance of her heart flows into you, you can begin to open yourself to recognizing that the goddess is breathing her love into you, not only through the heart, but through every pore of your body. And you just allow yourself to receive it. In esoteric tantra, especially in the Sri Vidya tradition of tantra, which is mostly a South Indian tradition, but which also appears in Nepal, and which has begun to spread around the world. You know, the Sri Yantra, the Sri Chakra, which is probably the most famous mandala from the East, that it's one that pretty much everyone knows. And it's going to appear on your, there's going to be an image of it on the course page, and we will have a little meditation on the Sri Yantra that you're welcome to practice during the week. The word Vidya means wisdom or science. And Sri, of course, means auspicious. So the Sri Vidya tradition is a tradition of auspicious wisdom. And those of you who know Douglas Brooks know that he wrote a book about the practice of the Sri Vidya tradition called auspicious wisdom. In the Sri Vidya tradition, and this is really very important for our understanding of goddess practice, Lalita is understood to be not just a goddess, but goddess, you know, in the sense that we use the word God for Jehovah. We use the word goddess for this aspect of the divine feminine, which is the source of all, the ultimate divine authority. And we've said earlier when we discussed Kali and when we discussed Bhuvaneshwari, Kali and Bhuvaneshwari are also forms in which goddess, meaning the ultimate divine feminine, in which goddess appears. Lalita is the one that seems to me to be most deeply esoteric. You know, she's the fullness of divine presence that reveals herself on the transcendent level and also through every particle of the physical world. And she's also extremely esoteric because, generally speaking, Lalita is invoked. The heart of Lalita practice is not really the receiving of boons in the way that Lakshmi, for example, is invoked for the delights of bhakti, of enjoyment in your life. Lalita is a goddess of self-liberation. She's a goddess of the upper chakras. And the practices that invoke Lalita for the sake of awakening and liberation are done mostly through mantra and through a complex series of rituals and visualizations that you do with the chakra. So, as I say, we're going to do a simple meditation on the chakra in order to do the full meditation. You really do need to be initiated by a practitioner of the tradition. And I will give you also, if you want to find out more about this tradition, there's a book called The Kiss of the Yogini, which I'll include that on your homework assignment, which describes the whole ritual. However, the description in the book leaves out a lot of key things about how you do it, because it's not supposed to be a practice that you learn out of a book. Lalita in the Sri Vidya tradition and in the practice that we're going to be doing this week, Lalita is very much associated with the awakened Kundalini, especially Kundalini as she appears in the upper two chakras, in the Ajna chakra and the Sahasrara chakra. So when the Kundalini Shakti, the coiled evolutionary energy within a human being, awakens, rises, and unfolds in her fullness and begins to open up the upper chakra, the Sahasrara chakra, in the mythological story about Kundalini, it's said that in this chakra, the goddess reunites with her divine consort Shiva. So in the upper chakra, Lalita Tripura Sundari, known in this form as Kameshwari, the goddess of desire, unites in blissful erotic union with Shiva in his form as Kameshwara. So their lovemaking is the spiritual bliss that we experience upon full enlightenment. And it's very much about the full integration of the masculine, feminine, of wisdom and power, of emptiness and bliss, of all the apparent, of awareness and love, of the different aspects of our being that are often separated. So, again, your awareness is on the breath. You're sitting on the cloud. And you allow yourself to inhale the ruby red light of the ultimate love goddess, Lalita, whose shakti of primal, divine, creative passion flows softly into you with the breath. Her energy slides through your body, slides through your heart, slides through your pelvic region, through your sexual organs, through your anus, filling all the organs in your abdomen, flowing down your hip joints and into your legs, your thighs and knees and calves and feet. Feel that your whole body is filled with the light of Goddess Lalita, and that as she breathes you, your inner body pulsates with the rhythm of her soft, caressing love. Lalita is said to have 8 qualities: brilliance, the power to manifest whatever she wants, sweetness, depth, that is, there's no end to her, she's as deep can be, stability, she's stable, fully stable, even at her most playful, energy, Shakti is the actual Sanskrit word, grace. She's filled with grace and generosity. So she is brilliant. She can manifest anything. She has the quality of sweetness. She is deep, deeper than the ocean, higher than the sky. She is stable. She is filled with Shakti. She is the embodiment of Shakti. She is the embodiment of grace, and she's the embodiment of generosity. So I want to talk a little bit about the Tripura, the three cities that are contained in her name. The three cities refer to many different trinities. Three, as you know, is a profoundly esoteric number in really all traditions. And in Tantra, the three cities are the inner state of waking, dream, and deep sleep, or the physical body, the subtle dream body, and the causal body, where we go in deep sleep. the three cities are also the three cosmic worlds, which in the tradition are the earth plane, where we live, the astral worlds, the subtle worlds that we can't, most of us can't see, but which are literally present in every single atom, both in the dense world and in the subtle world, and then the higher worlds, the heavenly worlds, where the higher gods and goddesses live. The three cities are also the three perspectives. That is, the perspective of me, the perspective of you, and the perspective of it. So we all are able to take the perspective of I am myself. We can also see that another person has their own perspective, which we call the perspective of you. And then there's the existence of the world of objects, which we know as it. And these three perspectives, as it were, these are actually account for everything that exists. Everything is an I, has an I. Everything is to someone, to other eyes, is a you. And everyone also is an it. So these are the three worlds. The three worlds are also, told you they are, that the tripura is a big word. The three worlds are also the three main nadis or psychic channels in the body. The ida, the pingala, the ida being the moon channel on the left side of the body, the pingala being the sun channel on the right side, and the sushumna, which is the central channel, which runs up the center of the subtle body. And these three channels are the channels of breath, of prana. They're the channels which, when we go deep in meditation, and the central channel, the sushumna, opens up, we find ourselves in the world of transcendence, the world of total opening. And the three cities, the tripura, are also the fundamental to cosmic powers of will, desire. We use the word will and desire interchangeably. Knowledge and activity, which, again, the tantric sages, the tantric teachings tell us that these three powers are present in every moment, in every action. So the goddess is always manifesting as will. She's always manifesting as knowledge, and she's always manifesting as activity. So, her power of will is the force that gives direction to life. It's actually the force of evolution, the force that, you know, whether evolution is taking form as all the different changes that have gone on from, you know, the moment of the Big Bang to now. She's always evolving, as this world is always evolving. Her power of knowledge is, it's every form of knowledge, including the thoughts that go through the mind. But I love to think of the goddess's power of knowledge as being the fundamental intelligence in the DNA, that inbuilt knowing that lets a pea shoot grow into a pea plant rather than a corn plant, you know, or that lets a liver cell grow into a liver. So with that impulse to grow, with the knowing that allows us to grow in appropriate directions, and then with the power of action, which actually allows growth and transformation to occur, we can begin to realize that we are literally not the doers of our actions. The goddess is doing our actions. You know, just as the heart keeps beating on its own through the power of the life force, just as the blood moves through the veins and arteries through the power of the life force, just as the mind thinks through the power of the life force, just as the senses interact with what appears to be the physical world through the power of the life force, once we really recognize that the life force that keeps everything going in our bodies and the world is the goddess, then we also can start to see that she's speaking our words, she's acting through our bodies, she's performing our actions, and that everything that goes on in the world is this process of co-creation with the goddess's power of action. And that includes our free will. Our free will, which is hers, is paradoxically what allows us to choose to partner with her or resist her. So there is a form of the goddess's power of will that lives in us that we call free will, meaning individual will, which lets us move freely in the direction that she's pointing us, or dig in our heels and refuse to leave. And you know, this recognition of the power of the goddess's will, knowledge, and action to move through us and live our lives is what, you know, what allows us to see our life as a kind of a love affair in which the goddess is making love to every particle of the universe, which is also herself. So my guru used to say that this universe is the love flow of God manifest. And if we understand Lalita as that force behind all desire, all knowing, all activity, then we start to realize how we are too participating in this sacred energy that awakens in us, that not only lives our so-called normal life, but also can begin to wake us up to the truth. Her power of awakening is really at the heart of who Lalita is. She is that power that gives us the capacity to recognize ourselves as human embodiment of the divinity that is all this. So what the goddess asks us to realize as we tune into her is simply that her Shakti pervades everything there is, and that the faces of the different goddesses and male deities are all faces of the goddess Lalita. The goddess is like a diamond, like a very beautifully cut diamond, that as you turn it, you see that its light has many, many different facets, but every one of these facets shines. So, again, we'll be quiet for a moment and allow ourselves to feel the goddess making love to us through the air. You might imagine her energy flowing through the breath as this ruby red light flowing from her heart into your heart. You might simply allow yourself to feel the energy within the breath as her divine desire to open you fully through her erotic, passionate, soft, tender, ultimately empowering force of love. So let yourself breathe her in. Let her open your body. Let her make love to you. Let her trickle and flow through your heart. So let me tell you Lalita's story. The story of Lalita is actually connected to the story of Parvati and Shiva. And if you remember, because Parvati is a form of Lalita, or Lalita is a form of Parvati, there are different faces, different personalities. of one goddess, Parvati being the more domestic, demure version of Shiva's wife, Lalita being the much more expanded, wild, and powerful version. So this is the tantric story of Lalita. And again, it's an alternate version of the Shiva-Parvati story, because all of these stories have, they actually have different versions that you get in different sets or different texts. So we could say that there is an alt reality. So if you remember when Parvati and Shiva first discovered each other, Shiva was mourning his first wife Sati, who was also a form of the goddess, and who had immured herself, who'd set herself on fire, to really as an act of protest against her father's lack of respect for her. So Shiva has in his mourning, he's gone to his mountain retreat in the Himalayas, and he's sitting in meditation. He's been sitting in meditation for thousands of years, and his cosmic obligations are not being fulfilled. What it basically means in ordinary terms is that nobody's dying. Nothing is coming to an end, because Shiva is the deity who's supposed to take care of endings. And if you remember, Parvati comes and sits in front of Shiva. She's fallen in love with Shiva. She's a princess, 16-year-old princess. And the gods, Brahma and Vishnu, send Kama, the god of desire, into the grove where Shiva is meditating. And Kama lets loose one of his arrows, which are actually Lalita's arrows, into Shiva's heart. And Shiva opens his eyes, sees the goddess sitting in front of him, and is filled with love and lust. And without even a second thought, Shiva opens his third eye and incinerates Kama into ashes. You know, Shiva is the ultimate renunciate. One of the stories regarding this is that in this way, Shiva, through his eye of wisdom, removes all desire from the mind of a yogi. But this story sees it slightly differently. So Kama, the god of love, is in ashes on the ground. And one of Shiva's attendants, Shiva has various friends and attendants who are, you know, kind of goblin-like. One of Shiva's attendants gets the bright idea of bringing the pile of ashes to life. So he forms the ashes into a man, but the ashes take the form not of Kama, the love god, but of a demon. Because in a certain sense, the demon was born of Shiva's anger. And so he's a very angry demon. And he represents what happens to desire when it's suppressed. Something that, you know, many yogis understand the problematics of. His name is Banda. Banda means very good, and it's the name that Shiva gives him. Why does Shiva give it to him? Because this demon immediately asks Shiva for a boon, that he will be king of all the worlds for 60,000 years, no matter what. And for some reason, Shiva says, Banda, very good. So the demon then goes on to do the normal things that demons do in these stories. He attacks Indra and the other gods, defeats them. He enslaves all the human beings on earth. He becomes the richest, most powerful, authoritarian dictator in the three worlds. And, of course, the gods and the goddesses, you can see that this kind of situation has been going on in the world for a very long time, where some strong man takes over the government and the other side, the opposing forces, are powerless to do anything about it. So they go to the goddess, Tripura Sundari. She, of course, agrees. And so she, again, this is how the story goes. She appears in the palace of Banda, the demon, looking very beautiful. And She says, I've come to destroy you. She says in her sweet voice, maybe she's speaking up, sweet, upspeak, I've come to destroy you, she says. And Banda just thinks that's the cutest thing he's ever heard. He says, oh, you're so beautiful and you're so sweet. How can you destroy me? So the story goes that she opens her hands and out of her fingernails come 10 hugely powerful goddesses. They're called the 10 Mahavidyas. They include Kali. And also the 10 avatars of Vishnu, Rama, Krishna, and all the other avatars who come from God Vishnu, who come out of the goddess's 10 fingernails, and they completely waste the demon. And of course she slays Banda herself, restores the god of love, so that means that desire comes back into the world. And what's interesting about this story is that in all the hymns in which the goddess Lalita is praised, she's said to be the origin of all these deities. So the avatars of Vishnu are said to have emanated from the goddess's 10 fingernails. She's in the iconography, the goddess sits on a bed, which is supported by 4 male deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and 2 forms of Shiva. And she's shown sitting on the bed. Often Shiva is lying on the bed and she's sitting on Shiva's lap. Sometimes he's lying prone in corpse pose beneath her. Sometimes she's seen rising from a lotus, sitting on a lotus that comes from his navel. Her red color, is the color not only of passion and desire, but also of creativity. And I want to just say something about desire, because Lalita really is incarnate desire. You know, she has all the powers of the universe, but at her heart, she's Kameshwari. And desire, of course, is a very mixed bag, a very mixed blessing. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna asks Krishna, what are the causes of suffering and sin? Krishna says, desire and anger are the cause of every problem in the world. And yet, of course, the paradox is that desire is also the root of creative action. And we could say that there is a form of desire, a form of passion that harnesses anger for social change, for every form of social change. And I want to read you some remarks by the African-American feminist writer Audre Lorde, who writes very, very passionately on the subject of Eros. And I want to read you a couple of these passages, which I feel actually describe the innate experience of Goddess Lalita. The erotic is a resource within each of us that lies in a deeply female and spiritual plane, firmly rooted in the power of our unexpressed or unrecognized feeling. So the erotic is our deepest unrecognized feeling, I believe, aliveness. In order to perpetuate itself, every oppression, every oppressive power hierarchy or every form of oppression must corrupt or distort the various sources of power within the culture of the oppressed that can provide energy for change. So the erotic, which Lalita incarnates, is every form of power. And it's one of the reasons why sexuality is so suppressed in this culture and other cultures. But the deepest truth about the erotic, about Lalita, is that when we let Lalita arise, when we let her live through us, she actually can change it all, can change everything. So here's Audre Lorde. When we recognize the power of our own eros, we can begin to demand from ourselves and from our life pursuits that they feel in accordance with that joy that we know ourselves to be capable of. Our erotic knowledge empowers us, becomes a lens through which we scrutinize all aspects of our existence, forcing us to evaluate those aspects honestly in terms of their relative meaning within our lives. And this is a grave responsibility projected from within each of us, not to settle for the convenient, the shoddy, the conventionally expected, or the merely safe. The erotic, she says, is an internal sense of satisfaction to which, once we have experienced it, we know we can aspire. For having experienced the fullness of this depth of feeling and recognizing its power, in honor and self-respect, we can require no less of ourselves than that we rise to the power that we have within us. So, you know, one thing about tuning into the goddess Lalita and to this empowered erotic quality in life is that it can show us where satisfaction is, but it also can show us what we're missing. So she's a very, very volatile goddess. And I would also say, because the goddess is desire, in fact, in one of my favorite verses of the Sundarya Lahari, which is a hymn by Shankaracharya, which, you know, Sundarya Lahari means wave of beauty. And he says that when the grace of the goddess falls upon a man, millions of beautiful maidens, their bodies rosy with erotic desire, their dresses falling from their beautiful limbs, such maidens pursue even an old impotent man who has received your grace. In other words, the power of the goddess's grace makes everybody alluring, makes everybody desiring. So in this sense, Lalita is our desire, and that means our desire for whatever we desire. You know, Kabir, the great poet of 16th century Varanasi, one of the really, really great spiritual poets of the world, wrote, "It's the intensity of your longing for God that does the work." You know, so, and this is very important in understanding the goddess, because we said a couple of weeks ago that her name in the cosmos is Shakti, her name in our human organism is bhakti or devotion, that when the goddess manifests as longing for awakening, as longing for God, that's when it becomes possible to transform our consciousness. So in another sense, Lalita is also the goddess through whose power we vision a new life, through whose power we co-create a more beautiful world. And when we're willing to move deeply into the Shakti, when we're willing to move deeply into our desires and to feel our desires in their fullness, and to then turn them towards the goddess, that's when the miraculous happens, when the miraculous occurs. I would say, you know, two things about goddess practice. In bhakti, in devotional practice, it's often said that there are several different ways of expressing or experiencing devotion to the divine. One of them is to see the divine as a parent. Another is to see the divine as a friend. And the highest form of devotion is said to be the devotion of the lover. So, and the goddess Lalita, like Krishna, who's in a certain sense, I feel the masculine version of, you know, the ultimately alluring divine, that the erotic love of the divine, however it is expressed within us, is said to be the fastest and the most complete way of merging into the divine. So in this practice that we've been doing today of opening to the subtle love affair that Lalita is conducting through the breath, you really do begin to open yourself to a tantric understanding of what the enlightened state really is. It's an open-eyed experience of the entire world as a mass of pulsing beauty. So the vision that she imparts as we practice with her, as we get to know her, is a vision of the world in which everything is dancing, where nectar drips onto the back of your tongue from the Sahasrara, and the pulsing joyfulness of Kundalini pervades your entire body. So we'll do a final meditation. And this time we're going to meditate on the central channel and Lalita in the central channel. So let your inhalation now flow through the nostrils. And then see if you can become aware with the inhalation of this very slender channel of energy and light, which runs from the base of the spine all the way up through the crown. Let your inhalation draw the attention down to the base, and then exhaling, feel the energy flow up the center of the body, up to the crown. You can bring your awareness with the inhalation down to this place at the base of the spine, the perineum between the anus and the sexual organ. Breathing in and out. See if you can allow the energy of Lalita to be present in your Muladhara chakra, in your perineum, and actually see if you can feel the desire energy which is in all of our bodies, imagining that the desire energy of Lalita at the base of the spine, at the perineum, is rising up through the body with your next exhalation. So the inhalation brings your attention down to her space at the base of the body. The exhalation draws the energy up through the central channel into the heart. So as you inhale, your attention goes down to the base. As you exhale, your attention comes up to the heart. And you inhale into the heart, and then with the exhalation, you feel the rosy energy of Lalita rising up into the throat, filling your entire throat with softness, with a sensation of loving satisfaction. You inhale through the nostrils down into the throat, and then with the exhalation, you allow the energy to rise up through the head to the very center of the head, above the soft palate, behind the forehead, behind the space between the eyebrows, in the center of the head. Imagine that there is a lotus made of golden light in the center of your head, and begin to sense the presence of the goddess Lalita, the ruby red goddess Lalita, the goddess of fulfilled desire, of enlightened eroticism, the goddess of tantric enlightenment, seated at the lotus, on this lotus at the center of your head. And as the breath flows in, each inhalation lets you sense her presence there in the center of the head, her ruby red body undulating. Perhaps she appears as a flame, perhaps you experience her as a feminine form, perhaps there's just a feeling there. With the next inhalation, you let the breath truly merge in this image or thought of the goddess in the head. And then with the exhalation, you feel that her ruby red love melts down from the center of the head, flowing through the face, through the brain, through the neck, through the heart. And as you inhale and exhale, feel as though the goddess seated in the center of your head, the ruby red goddess on the golden lotus of light, is sending her warmth, her radiance, her adoring, subtle beauty, flowing from the center of the head down through your body, through your heart and lungs, like a rosy liquid, a subtle red nectar that flows through your abdominal organs, touching every part of your inner body. Feeling the energy inside your body, the energy of your heartbeat, the energy of your breath, as the Shakti of the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari flowing and pulsating to every pore of your body, as though her liquid rosy light is flowing in streams from the center of your head down through your brain, your neck, your throat, your heart, your lungs, the whole body. And you can say to yourself, Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikaye Namaha. Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikaye Namaha. Om Aim Rim Shrim Lalita Ambikaye Namaha. We bow to that one who is the embodiment of creativity, manifestation, and auspiciousness, the playful lotus lady who lives in every pore of our body and every particle of this universe. And you can very gently bring your attention to the breath. You can open your eyes, or not. We have a little time for questions, and you can press star 2 to raise your hand, and Deb will call on you. And we're also, it's also possible to write your questions, send your questions through the webcast.
Sally, Laurel had a question from earlier. She said, would you suggest a powerful way to easily relax into the divine beloved inside me rather than flowing to another relentlessly. I bring it back lovingly to all three centers. There must be a way to refine this so divine beloved is primarily inside me and only flows to another by choice or whimsy without losing embodied felt sense of grace of Shiva Shakti within.
That's a great question, Laurel, and I think it's one that many of us work with. The thing is, this is something that becomes real through practice. So I like your practice of actually accessing the three centers and accessing the Sushumna Nadi. I found, and I think this is true for many of you, that once you establish a sense of the central channel, you know, this slender thread of energy that flows from the perineum at the base up through the body just in front of the spinal column and through the center of the head, and then can actually connect you to the sun above and to the earth below. But mainly what the Sushumna Nadi will do is keep you internally focused, so you can let the breath flow from through the different centers, flow from the Hara center or the Muladhara up to the heart, to the center of the head, and back down. And as you get used to feeling the breath flowing internally, you find that you are automatically centered, and that when you feel or express love for another human or, you know, a place or an animal, that you're simultaneously moving out towards the world, but also keeping your attention inward. The central channel is one of the most effective practices for keeping internal, and so is focusing in the heart. But I would give you a more radical practice, which I'm hoping that we will all work with and work with over time. And for this, you actually need to choose or to allow yourself to be chosen by a particular goddess form. So it's not like you have to know her name. It's not like you have to say, okay, this is Lalita, or this is Lakshmi, or this is Bhuvaneshwari. But you need to cultivate this sense of presence with a particular goddess, because as human beings, that's what lets us focus and concentrate. So I'm going to give you these two practices for internalizing your sense of goddess. One is to really cultivate this practice that we've been doing today of imagining the goddess. Start by imagining her in front of you and then breathe her in to your body. I believe we did that with Lakshmi last week. And eventually, as you do this, you'll start to feel that there is an internal divine presence that's actually inside your body, just under the skin. And you'll begin to feel that you really are an embodiment of goddess. It will come and go. There will be times when it feels very strong, especially if you're meditating a lot. And there will be times when it's not so strong. But as you cultivate the Sushumna Nadi and this sense of goddess as an internal presence, let's say an inner body inside your physical body. I sometimes imagine her just inside my skin, just pulsing inside my skin. It's once you have started to feel how it feels to be doing this practice and cultivate it for, usually takes a few weeks. I say 21 days is a very good time to really internalize a practice like this. But once you've cultivated it, you'll find that you can just close your eyes for a minute and you'll feel the presence of the Sushumna or the presence of the goddess, and you will be internally focused. And then it's just a question of remembering. So thank you very much for that question. And let's see who else has something to ask or say. So, Deb?
There was somebody on. I have a question from the webcast, that's what I was trying to get to. So we can take the person that is it's in Oregon. I think
okay.
It's Wendy.
Okay.
Hi, Sally. It is Wendy.
Hi, Wendy. Hi.
Hey. So this is a beautiful goddess that I can relate to very deeply, but I'm wondering if you could talk about sort of how to integrate that divine, erotic sort of desire, creation with the earlier one you were working with Dumavati, which has always been kind of a scary goddess for me to come close to, but feels like she's coming closer to me. And I know that there's a relationship between those two, but I don't know how to talk about it or think about it or live with it. Do you have any ideas about that?
I would say when you're recognizing Dumavati in your life, you know, when you're feeling that events are connecting you to Dumavati, I would say you don't really have to connect her to Lalita or any other goddess. You simply have to feel into the divine quality of what you're experiencing as a difficulty or as a sense of stuckness or as frustration. And as you do that, as you really let yourself recognize, whether you do it by going, okay, it's okay for this to be happening, it's okay for me to feel this, which is sort of the first step.
It's like, I think it's an aging sort of maturity depth thing. Like where letting go of everything, that nothing is yours, and yet even in that space you still have this deep desire.
So you let go of everything, then you let go of that desire. And then you tune into the felt sense of desire that remains. So if you say to yourself, okay, I want, let's say it's a desire for the ultimate love, or, you know, the desire for a project to work out, or the desire for your child to be happy. I mean, you know, good desires. We assume, Wendy, that you only have positive desires. So you can feel that desire and the intensity of it. And then with that feeling, that felt sense, that full felt sense of desire, let go of it. And you can do this by, I will often just imagine the form of the desire, imagine it in my hand and imagine myself handing it to the goddess just as an offering, which is a very lovely way of cultivating some detachment, but in a spirit of devotion. And the other thing is that it's just when you feel the desire, which, yes, shows up in our lives under circumstances which we never would have believed we would have a desire, feel into the energy of desire. Just find your way into the pulsation of that longing inside your body. Because inside that longing, inside the felt sense of that longing, if you can stay with it, is the expression of Lalita. So, again, thank you. Thank you for that. I'd like you to experiment with it and then let me know how it's going. Because it's a very subtle practice, but it's one of the practices for freedom, is to learn how to tune into the felt sense of desire. And just let desire itself spread itself through your body with the awareness that it's the goddess Lalita. Letting go of the object. You know, by having the thought or the impulse, I want this, you are actually seeding the intention into the universe. In other words, the goddess hears you. So that's a perfectly legitimate first step.
But how about desiring not to desire?
That's a good one, too.
Not wanting it to be your way. Not wanting to win the way you would win. Is that the desire you're talking about that's held in the
release? What happens when you offer a desire with the intention to release it, the desire will morph. It'll change. And that's why what I mean, you have to practice with it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to practice with it and really gain confidence in what it means to have a desire morph, because you don't want to get rid of all desire. You know, it's actually desire that gets you out of bed in the morning. You know what I mean? It's just that you need to learn how to tune into the energy and direct it. So we're going to take another question.
Thank you.
I see there are about 6 hands raised. So thank you for that one. It's a fundamental question that you ask. Absolutely fundamental. So
okay. Suri asks a question. In some pictures, Lalita holds a bird in one of her hands. What does the bird represent?
The bird is a parrot, and it represents the power of speech. It's also the pictures of Lalita with a parrot refer to her presence in a particular form and in a particular temple in South India. But you know, she's mantras, she's speech, she's wisdom, she, you know, the parrot also represents the whole, the fact that the animal world is also equally imbued with goddess.
We have one other question.
Let's take questions from the people whose hands are raised. Okay, because we've
okay. I'm not seeing any. So.
Oh, okay. I'm seeing Heather.
Oh.
Karen.
Okay.
Joyce.
All right. I will.
And unless they're showing up, unless it's a mistake on my thing, but they're all okay. So I see check marks by their names. So.
That's not raised hands. So
okay, sorry.
So it's okay. In the webcast, we have someone that asked, could you speak a bit more about Dumavati as a doorway to the Lalita?
Yes. So the secret of Dumavati is that she's the goddess who appears when everything has been taken away. When everything has been taken away, when you're left with just yourself, you know, just your breath, just the heartbeat, just the feeling of being yourself, you have an opportunity to begin to recognize what lives inside you that cannot be destroyed, cannot be removed, and then to tune into the energy of what cannot be destroyed. And as you do that, there's an opening that occurs. And again, this is one of the most fundamental moments in spiritual life, when you consent to letting go of everything. And then you find that as you're sitting in that emptiness, which is the essence of Dumavati, the sense that, you know, there's nothing supporting you, there's nothing coming your way, that you're in a sort of no man's land, as it were, then if you can let yourself be present there with the intention to invoke the grace of the goddess Dumavati, then what happens is you watch that empty, you see that empty space, that sort of dullness, sadness, sense of disaffection. You see it starting to shift. And out of that dullness emerges this profound feeling of satisfaction and fulfillment, which is not dependent on anything. And if you keep staying present to that sense of fulfillment, then it reveals itself as the goddess Lalita's pulsing sweetness. It's one of the mystical secrets of deep meditation, is that when you go into the nothing, when you go into the suffering, when you go into the stuckness, that at the heart of the stuckness, at the heart of the suffering, is the opening into beauty, love, and grace. That's the mystery of the goddess. She can take everything away and then in that moment reveal herself as the great ruby red dancer of delight, of the beauty of the universe. So in those moments when, you know, when you look at your aging body and you say to yourself, I don't necessarily have that much longer and there's so many things I haven't done, or when you're feeling tired or when you're feeling sick or your efforts have come to nothing, turn back into the feeling and let go of the story. We've talked about this many times, but tune into the feeling and let go of the story and see if you can just keep going in to the feeling. As Audre Lorde says, you know, these unrecognized feelings, these feelings that we bury even from ourselves, which are masked by numbness, which are masked by sadness, which are sometimes masked by pain, by the feeling of acute pain. If you're willing to enter it, to hold it, to be with it, and this is key, to honor it as a form of goddess, then Dumavati becomes the gateway to Lalita. So, Deb, do we have any other questions?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, darling, so this is our last actual spoken class, but there's lots of homework. And you know, the listserv is going to be open for the next couple of weeks, so please do this experiment. This experiment that several of you have brought up, the experiment of tuning into the stuck places and letting yourself find what's behind the stuckness, what's at the heart of the stuckness. The key there is to, you know, to notice the thoughts that come up about it and let the thoughts go. And also experiment with bringing the red goddess into your body. Experiment with the mantras. Experiment with just spending some time at the beginning of meditation, and there'll be instructions for this in the homework assignment, of imagining her in front of you, then breathing her into your body, and meditating with the feeling that Lalita is sitting in your body. And as we close tonight, I also want to say how much I'm loving what you guys are saying on the listserv and what you divine beings are saying on the listserv. How much I'm loving the connections that we are making, that you all are making, and the atmosphere that's created around this. So we won't be having any teleclasses until November, when we're going to be doing a class on death and dying, which I think will be fantastic. We'll be practicing with some of the goddesses in relationship to this class, but especially we'll be working with our own understanding about dying. We'll be working with what the tradition says, what the process of dying is, and what it means to actually be able to so master your inner state, your inner body, that you can walk through death with your consciousness intact. And I've also been asked by a few people to, if we could consider doing a couple of courses on individual goddesses, so that, you know, we can spend a longer period of time with each one, because I know that a week is just about enough time to get a taste of her. So we have 2 weeks to play with Goddess Lalita, and those of you who want to explore Dumavati, of course, you're very welcome to do that, to feel into, and I would say the way to do it is to find a moment when you're feeling discouraged, depressed, sad, uncertain, stuck, and let go of the idea of what the circumstances are. Feel into the feeling. Where is it in your body? And just see if you can stay with it. And, you know, in that moment of feeling into the feeling, just ask the goddess Dumavati to give you the wisdom to to understand what this moment is showing you and to show you how to hold stasis or suffering in such a way that you don't make it wrong or bad, but really feel the power that it has to let you assimilate your life experience. So I would suggest that you do one session with Dumavati, experimenting with working with a stuck feeling. And if one is coming up spontaneously, that's a perfect moment for working with her. But what I would like to encourage you to do is to work with the Lalita practices and really let yourself own the empowered goddess of auspiciousness, power, and beauty. Whether you're a woman or a man, her presence in your body as you let yourself become comfortable with being that beautiful, that big, that empowered, that erotic, that filled with love. If you can let yourself experience moments of inhaling and holding the goddess in your body, you're going to discover how much you are goddess. You're going to discover your own capacity for being a divine human. And that's not a joke. That's not hyperbole. That is really how tantric goddess practice works. And I want that for you guys. I want that for all of you. I hope that you'll practice and write into the listserv and let us share your experience. So thank you all so much, so much for being part of this, for all the practice that you've done, for all the practice that you're going to do in the future, for your intention to understand the bliss of this universe as the Divine Feminine. And so we'll close with just by returning to this meditation that we began with. Your eyes are closed. The breath is flowing. Let yourself feel that the goddess Lalita Tripura Sundari is making love to you through the air, through the breath. As though with every breath you take, you're inhaling her love. And you're letting that love open you. Open you to the love that pours through this universe, even when it seems loveless. Because in her adoration for every particle of this universe, she is constantly unfolding new forms of love and new forms of lovemaking. So have a beautiful evening, a beautiful week. The recording will be available tonight or tomorrow. The homework will come your way early in the morning. Thank you, Deb. Thank you, everyone. Huge love. Namaste. Om Aim Hrim Shrim Lalita Ambikaye Namaha. Good night.